Father Sullivan's Sunday sermon was, "Forgive Your Enemies." He asked how many of the congregation have forgiven their enemies. About half held up their hands. He then repeated his question. Now about 80% raised their hands. He then repeated his question once more, and all responded, except one elderly lady. Father Sullivan said, "Mrs. O'Malley, are you not willing to forgive your enemies?" "I don't have any," Mrs. O'Malley said. "Well, Mrs. O'Malley, that is very unusual. Please tell the congregation how a person could not have a single enemy in the whole world." Mrs. O'Malley sweetly replied, "I'm 93 years old and I've outlived every one of those witches." So, have you forgiven your enemies? Have you buried the hatchet, called someone who has wronged you, and just simply said, "I forgive you"? Father Sullivan's funny sort of intro into the sermon begins to sound no more like fire and brimstone preaching, right? It's somehow subordinating the gospel to the law, meaning let's stand up and say, "Have you truly forgiven everybody? Have you forgiven your enemies?" Of course, none of us, if we're honest, have truly let go of all of our enemies. And yet, Jesus says, "But I say to you that, listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, give them the other cheek to strike." Love your enemies. In other words, it's even more than just forgiving, isn't it? Jesus is exhorting us to actually love those that hate us, that stand in our way, to show kindness to those that spew epithets at us, to thank those that may cut us off in traffic, or that steal our place in the grocery store line, or steal our place in the corporate ladder, steal our pew seat. In other words, pray for those who hurt us, and then offer ourselves as a punching bag. Who wants to be a punching bag? So Father O'Malley's sermon really should have been like, stand up if you're willing to look at your neighbor and just take a big old, right hook. And then say, that hurt, but hit the other side too. Because that's precisely what Jesus is saying. Can any of us do this? Can any of us do this? Well, we ordered some rugs 2 years ago, and they never arrived, even though they'd sent us the tracking information. So finally, we called and asked the company, where are our rugs? And they're like, "Oh, we'll figure it out." So they came back a couple weeks later, took a while, and they said that we don't know. The company that we shipped the rugs with lost the rugs, and we're sorry. I was like, "You're sorry? Where are my rugs?" And by then I was getting mad. I'd sent them emails and called them. It's a small company in Idaho. I'll tell you who it is later because I'm still mad about it, but you'll hear more about it. And so anyway, they were like, "Well, do you want to order some new ones?" And I was like, "Well, just send the ones we already paid for." "We can't do that. They're lost." "I didn't lose them. You did." "Well, we didn't lose them either. The trucking company lost them." "But I didn't hire the trucking company. You did." So anyway, I was getting more and more heated. I know this is hard to believe, but my temperature was going way up. Finally, I was like, "I used to be a retailer. You know, we paid for something. You haven't delivered it to us. You need to give us something else." She's like, "That's not how our policy works. You paid for them, and they were lost, and I'm sorry that they're lost." "Well, where are my rugs?" They're like, "Well, you can give us your credit card number and buy new rugs." Well, we really needed these rugs, and so I finally talked to the lady. She goes, "We'll file an insurance claim, and when they pay us, we'll just give you the money."
It's like, okay, well, we'll order the rugs. So we ordered another pair of rugs, and they did arrive on time, and they sent them to us really quickly, and they did give us a little discount. So then I called, and I was like, you know, about the other rugs that we bought that we never got, could I get an insurance? Can we get the claim? Oh, I didn't tell you? They denied the claim. Oh, my God. I've never been so upset in my life. I reviewed the company online. I called a lawyer about suing them. And it wasn't a lot of money. It's just the principle of the whole thing. I Googled the owners and found out one went to Dartmouth. And I thought about calling the Alumni Association at Dartmouth and talking about the guy. Now, maybe I'm unique, but my hunch is that all of you, all of us, have had somebody that's gotten a bee under your bonnet, a burr in your saddle, right? That just gotten under your skin. Now, I've let it go. This was a little while ago. But have I really let it go? No! I still get emails from them offering discounts on rugs, and I get mad. I call them about every 2 weeks and say, hey, I'm just calling about my refund that I never got. And I get angry, meaning I don't want to get angry. Turns out you can't sue somebody in another state without traveling there, so that wasn't worth it. But I was really, really upset. It drives us crazy, in other words. So how are we possibly going to love somebody like that? How are we possibly ever going to love that? Well, if we read the passage and we hear it as a commandment, something like Father O'Malley was trying to teach us, Father Sullivan trying to teach us, if we live it as some sort of do or die moment in our life with Christ, then all the pressure's on us. And if you're like me, you want to run and grab a parachute and get as far away from that type of wagging finger as you can find, because it's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. It's absolutely impossible to execute a love of enemy on your own. It's no way you can do it. If you can, please tell me. Tell everybody. Stand up right now. No. It's impossible. Because the true reality is that this can't happen. That it's impossible for us to root out with a snake all those pieces of hate or anger in our hearts. We're just human. We're just human. So then what are we to do? What are we to do when we hear these exhortations from Jesus? Well, we have to turn to the gospel. Not to our own work, in other words, but to the work of the one who hung on the cross. Martin Luther, talking about Jesus' work and this passage, writes, when you see how Jesus works, however, and how he helps everyone to whom he comes or who is brought to him, then rest assured that faith is accomplishing this in you and that he is offering your soul exactly the same sort of help and favor through the gospel. So if you pause here and let him do you good, that is, if you believe he benefits and helps you, then you really have it. You have Jesus working in you to accomplish these things. Christ is yours, Luther writes, given to you as a free gift by God. Luther, as Kierkegaard wrote in his journal, was an extremely important patient for Christianity. So Luther's writing this as a patient, not just an exegete or a philosophical thinker, meaning Luther had read this passage for years and felt a need to repent over and over again, so much so that many people say he would wear out a confessor every single week. Every week. Poor confessors. I mean, just roll through them. And you see him in these stories or in some of the movies that have been made about Luther, about him just wearing hair shirts and anything he can to condemn himself, to come down on himself for his own behavior. All he heard was law, in other words. All commandment and no grace. And then this light bulb switched. And he realized that it was Jesus, not him, who accomplishes these things. It's Jesus that loves Judas. It's Jesus that loves Peter even before he is about to deny him. It's Jesus that says from the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." It's Jesus that offers and fulfills the Beatitudes. And we're just simply given this gift, this reality, one that we enter into and experience as the gospel changes our lives. There's a place that the Celtic Christians, and you all, many of you have heard me talk about this because it's really powerful, that the Celtic Christians coined. It's called the thin space. And the idea is that it's between sort of this kingdom and the next, and there's a very thin space between that. And many times in immense grief or when the worst of the worst has happened, many people experience these thin spaces, meaning you experience God's presence and love and that peace that passes all understanding right in that moment. But you also experience it when we find these profound acts that are in the Beatitudes today. When you do receive forgiveness from someone that you did not expect it, you're stopped in your tracks, aren't you? You get goosebumps. You get a softening of heart. If you're in a fight with your spouse, it may go on for days sometimes, and all of a sudden you look at each other and it melts away. That's a thin space. You're in a fight with a child or with a coworker or a friend. You know the feeling and it disappears. That's a thin space. That's God's grace pouring down in your life. The Lutheran pastor, Nadia Bolz-Weber, describes it like this. In my limited understanding of everything, all I know is that we come from God. I swear you can smell him on the heads of newborns. It's just a great line, by the way. And while we are here, we have access to God, our divine source. When we come to God in prayer and when we are forgiven by someone, when we show mercy, when we love ourselves, and when we are of service to others, when we sing and when we admit our faults, and when we cry and weep, these are the thin spaces in which the veil between here and the heart of God is translucent. What Jesus is doing today in the Beatitudes is he's showing us the gospel at work. Not our work. His work in our lives. There was a great article called The Power of Forgiveness in the Atlantic Monthly last week. And it's a story about Pablo Castro, who was a father of nine and a convenience store worker. And in Corpus Christi, Texas, in 2004, he was beaten and stabbed to death for $1.25. His killer was a man named John Henry Ramirez, who was a 20-year-old ex-Marine who had begun using drugs at 12. And by the time that he spotted Castro that night, he was on the tail end of a multi-day alcohol, Xanax, and cocaine binge. Ramirez was put to death this past fall. And the article details how a local pastor, Pastor Moore, ministered to Ramirez, and ultimately the Supreme Court ruled that Moore could lay his hands on this killer, convicted killer, right before he died by lethal injection. At the end of the article, here's what Moore says, and it is so powerful to think about the gospel accepting and loving all of us, and then being the ointment, being the umbrella that incorporates our whole community into one fellowship of the saints in love. Moore says, God sees John as he created him, and not the sum of all the things that he had done in his life. The view of Ramirez from God's eyes, or from Moore's, must seem very strange to the assessment of the state of Texas, who made it a man on the day he was sentenced and held until the night he was dead, when he was a condemned killer. Moore finishes by saying, may all our enemies be judged by Texas. True statement. And that we ourselves be judged by God. Amen.